Hey everyone, you're tuning in to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Man, I have such a pleasure and honor and privilege of speaking with Nigel Hall from the Nigel Hall Band and from Lettuce, amazing vocalist and keyboard player, originally from Washington, D.C. We get to talk about that as well as his work with Lettucey, Robert Randolph, and so many other great bands, including Soul Live. Please help me welcome Nigel Hall. Hello, Nigel.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Oh, man, super stoked to have you on the podcast and talk to you today. I'm a big fan.
Thank you, man.
How's everything going for you this morning?
Better now.
Or afternoon. Yeah, right? Where are you located currently?
I'm located in New Orleans, Louisiana, the greatest city in the world.
Nice. Yeah, man. I love New Orleans. We've had some people from New Orleans on the podcast, some of Trombone Shorty's cousins, Glenn David Andrews and Andrews. They're all named Glenn Andrews. It's very confusing.
Yeah, they're all this. You can't tell the difference between them either. If you were blind and heard them play, you could never tell.
Yeah, I just know them by their instruments, like who plays trombone, who plays trumpet, etc. Yep. But I mean, definitely a famous family for sure in that area.
Of course, the Marsalises also is another. People always mention the Marsalises and the Andrews. They never say anything about the Batistes other than just recently because of my man on Stephen Colbert's show. His name is slipping me right now.
Yeah, John Baptiste.
Yeah, John. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know they're just getting hip to the Batistes, but that whole family is ridiculous too. You know, it's just a lot of lineage down here, which is really really great, and it's something to really be grateful to be a part of. That's all.
Well, you are definitely in that mix of so many different things. I mean, just going through all your music with Lettuce, your own project, and so many people that you've worked with, super excited to get into it. So let's chat about the latest Lettuce album first. You guys have Resonate, and you just did a remix for that as well. But since that's the group's seventh studio record, like, what was the process of making this one and makes it different from the other ones?
Wait a minute, which one? Resonate?
Resonate.
The last record, Elevate, we recorded all of the songs for both Elevate and Resonate in one session.
Wow.
So this was a session that we did in Colorado. We had the great Russ Elevato, who's a really good friend of mine now, and you know, he's one of the greatest. He's one of the people behind the sound of neo soul. You know, mm-hmm. He had a hand in the most influential records, I think, in the last fucking shit 30 years, I guess. D'Angelo, Voodoo being one of them. Yeah. Erykah Badu, Mama's Gun being another, which is probably my favorite of all of them. Mm. So we all were there, and we were in the studio for about a week, and I think we recorded about 30 songs. In fact, I think we still got a whole another 12 songs left from that session that we haven't released yet, which may or may not see the light of day. Who knows? I don't know. We recorded that session was just fun. It was just a lot of good vibes, a lot of, you know, I always say that the best music that's ever going to be made is music amongst friends. And it's just us in the studio just hanging out, being friends. And we all had songs and we played and we all had our instruments. We had plenty of weed and it was great and it was awesome. And just the vibe was just held, pinned up in the sky so it would never come down. So it was really good. It was you know, just everything was comfortable. And that's the best way, that's the only way to make a record. You got to be comfortable. I'm more comfortable in the studio than I am in my own house sometimes. So, you know, because that's a place where you can create and, you know, allow those thoughts to become something tangible, you know, and it's a really good thing. And it's good to do with your friends. I know I said all of that to say that. So there you go.
So then let's talk about your own project, the Nigel Hall Band's debut record, Ladies and Gentlemen. It's a commercial and critical success. And it was the first time you really toured extensively as a solo act. So mm-hmm. How is that different from your work with Lettuce and the other groups?
Well, with my band, I get to do what the fuck I want. And I can't do what the fuck I want with Lettuce. I mean, I can, but like, I, you know, We it's a collective thing, and Nigel Hall thing is my thing is, it's not, I guess that's the wrong way to say it. My thing is more soul, you know. I'm more of a I'm really all over the place when it comes to the things that influence me as a musician. But ladies and gentlemen, that kind of thing in the Nigel Hall band or whatever it is, whatever it ends up, is just kind of more of a reflection of where I am musically at the time. Lettuce is just straightforward funk, you know? There's really no time for, not necessarily sensitivity, but there's no time for playing around, man. We came to funk, and we make that very clear. We can mellow out sometimes, but even then, it's still super funky, you know? The idea is to keep the sledgehammer hot at all times, whereas with my band, you know, it is what it is, what I want it to be that particular day.
Yeah, I definitely hear that in the music. And it's nice to be able to have that departure and have that creative control for sure.
And actually, ladies and gentlemen, was technically my second record. I actually have a debut record called The Face of Things to Come that will never see the, that I hope never sees the light of day again. As far as I know, I think it's out of print. Nobody can find it. I think all I own of it is one digital copy just for memorabilia. But other than that, you know, I don't really urge any. I know I just made everybody go on their phones or computers to start looking for this record. But Ladies and Gentlemen was actually my second record. So, but this is it was also, I mean, it's all learning. It's all a learning experience. You know, when you make records, the music that you create, you always change, you know? We always change. We as people change every second. So, you know, when I hear that record, I think of like 15 years ago. You know, there's an interesting story with that record. That record sat on the shelf for, I want to say 5 years. Mm. Before anybody ever even heard it, and I was playing it out live, but nobody had ever heard the record. It was just songs that they just thought these were songs I was just jamming on. Like, I made a record, and it sat on the shelf for 5 years. I mean, this record was old enough to use the bathroom on its own before it came out. And you know, but I'm glad people got to hear it. I can't wait for people to hear the next one. The next one's gonna be fucking smash.
Oh, man, I have no doubt. I have no doubt
about that one.
So then let's get into your origin story. Now, you were discovered by Lettuce co-founder Ryan around 2007, and he invited you to Brooklyn to meet Eric Krasno and record with the jazz band Soul Live. And then you eventually connected with the drummer from Lettuce, Adam, and Questlove from The Roots, and you began appearing on stage with Soul Live, Lettuce, and the Royal Family affiliates. So what was that like? 13 years ago, if we can rewind and then fast forward to now, like,
wait a minute. Say all of that again, because I think you might have some information messed up.
I might, so you can correct me too.
Okay, now, yeah, say it again, and I'll stop you when I hear something sketchy.
Okay, so it says you were discovered by Lettuce co-founder Ryan around 2007.
Around 2006. That's, okay. But that's around, so that's right, Ryan Zoidis.
Yep. And then you were invited to Brooklyn to meet Eric Krasno and record with Soul Live.
Right. Now, let me stop you there. What happened was I got a phone. I was living in Bangor, Maine at the time, believe it or not. I'm originally, for all of those who don't know where I'm originally from, I'm from D.C. I'll hear a lot of people come to me and say, aren't you from Maine? I'm not from Maine. I spent a lot of time in Maine, but I'm not from Maine. I'm from Washington, D.C. Anyway, at the time this happened, I was in Maine. And Eric Krasno called me on the phone. You remember when we used to have landlines? You remember that? I had a landline, and he called my landline. He called me and was like, yo, this is Eric Krasno. And I have hung up on him. I actually hung up because I was like, this ain't Eric Krasno. I really thought somebody was pulling my leg, to be honest. Man, I'm so glad he called me back, because if he didn't, I mean, who knows what I'd be doing right now. But he called me and he was like, man, I want you. He sent me some tracks first. And I went to a studio in Bangor and I sang over these tracks and sent them back to him. And he was just like, man, this is the shit. So he called. So he bought me an airplane ticket from Bangor, Maine to New York City. I had never been on an airplane in my life. and I started playing with Soul Live. And that's how I got. Actually, it wasn't really supposed to be Soul Live. It Eric Krasnow was working on a band called Chapter Two, and it had me, Louis Cato, who plays in the Stephen Colbert band, Chris Laughlin, and myself. It was just a four piece. It's just a rock soul funk band, you know. So that's what that was for. But somehow, the lines got crossed. Somebody crossed the streams, I guess. And I ended up being in the Soul Live band. So yes, that's how I ended up in Soul Live. So that's fairly right what you read.
Okay. And then from there, then once you were connected with Ledith, you worked with the drummer from Ledith, and you started to work with Questlove from the Roots.
Well, I didn't work. I mean, Questlove came, he made an appearance on my record. I mean, I knew Questlove from the times that we played Bowl Live. I mean, I didn't really know him like I knew everybody else. You know, I never did any individual work with him. In fact, he did individual work with me. So, because he was on my record, you know, because of Eric Krasnow. And, you know, for that, I'm very, very appreciative of both of them for their time and their effort for making that good for me. But yeah, I always wanted to do some stuff with just Quest, because we're both nerds. And I mean, we've sat and talked before, and you know, we both are nerdy, and we both love what we love and really love it. We really get into the James Brown shit when we talk. Him and I are James Brown bishops, if you will, in the James Brown church, you know. And you know, I dare say this, but we both kind of like I mean, every era of James Brown is absolutely astonishing and fantastic and amazing. But we particularly like the PCP era, and that was really funny for us. And I don't know why. And we just sit and laugh about the worst James, the greatest worst James Brown songs, because they're still great. Even in what they sound like, they are still great, you know. So yeah.
Oh man, that's hilarious. My favorite James Brown live is the Love Power Peace.
Oh yeah, Love Power Peace is great. I like Sex Machine Live. Sex Machine Live, and what's the other one? Revolution of the Mind, which is Live at the Apollo Part 3, basically.
Oh wow. Okay.
You know, that whole record was that this was during the JB's era, 72, 73, and before he went to Africa, you know.
Oh yeah, and the Soul Power documentary. They're all great. I love what is that documentary show? They do like the cartoons of all the different people, and they show James Brown taking LSD for the first time.
Oh, Tales from the Tour Bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That shit is dope. Mike Judge, if you're listening, please bring season 3 for that. I don't care what it is. I don't care who it is. I don't care what kind of music it is. It could be fucking polka. Just bring it back, because we want to see that shit. We're bored. Musicians need some shit like that.
Oh man, so good, so good. So then, continuing down the track of what you've done in the last decade or so, you were nominated for a Grammy for your work on Ledisi's "Turn Me Loose" album, which is amazing. Yep. Her remake of "Them Changes" is ridiculous. Yeah. Yep. And the whole album, and I think it's definitely been slept on. And then also, you were with Snarky Puppy on Family Dinner Volume 1.
Yep.
And
Volume 2.
Volume 2.
Hold on. I think it's Volume 2. It's Volume 2, because there was a Volume 1 that was done somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah. Well, love the work on there. Thank you for that correction. And then you were also were on the Grammy nominated New Orleans own Chawa album.
Yeah.
That group. And then and you were on the Grammy-winning LP Go-Go Juice with John Cleary.
Yes, sir.
So how does it feel to like be a contributor on all of these really great side projects?
I just want to play music, man. That's all I care about. And I only want to, and I want to do real shit. And I don't want to put nothing out or do anything that I can't sleep at night over. I'm over it. I've done that part. Every musician has had to do that in their career. You know, and I'm just glad to be recognized for the dope shit that I've done. And I'm just, you know, that's all it is. I'm not out looking for none of this. I'm not out looking for an award or anything. I just want to fucking play music. And I just was just very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time.
I hear that. Now, speaking of Go-Go, to follow up on being originally from D.C., I'm also from Washington, D.C. area. How does that make
Stop playing. Where you from, bro?
I'm originally from Forestville, but I lived in Montgomery County.
Forestville?
Yeah.
From Forestville, Maryland?
Yes. Sirius
Are you apartment. Serious? Stop playing.
Yeah.
Bro, I used to live in... Do you know where Pembroke Terrace? Do you remember Pembroke Terrace?
Yeah.
That I used to live in Pembroke Terrace, bro.
Oh, man, that's
right
crazy.
Next to Suitland High School. That's where I used to live.
Both my parents went to Suitland. Yeah.
What? They went to Suitland? What? That's so dope. I'm sorry I'm getting so hype right now, but, like, that's dope. That's dope. Oh, yeah. And then to be from Forestville, of all the people I've ever met from D.C., you are the only one that lived in fucking Forestville. Can you believe that? You're the only one I've ever talked to that said Forestville. That's real shit. You just gained super points with me, bro. I just want you to know that.
Thanks, man. You just made
my whole day better just by that. I feel like a glow in my body now.
I wanted to know how the mix of funk, go-go, gospel, R&B, soul from that area specifically, since go-go is so regional in that area, how does that mix into your upbringing and musical style, like Melting Pot and Chocolate City?
Well, you know, I think you know as well as I do that anybody musically that comes from that area has a certain sauce that they have, you know? I mean... I don't want to say mumbo sauce because I actually don't like mumbo sauce, to be honest. But we got something that just hit different. It just hit different. I was on Instagram. I follow a brother named Joe Claire. He's a comedian. He's from D.C. also. But I follow him on Instagram. And he had there was this one video he put up that he was like, he has some go-go playing in the background. And he was like, you hear this right here? This is why people from the DMV don't know how to act. A boom, bop, a boom, bop. And he started doing all that. And he went through this whole rant about how people from the DMV just think everybody is fucking crazy because in actuality, you are. You know what I'm saying? You just are to us as people from DC because we hear, I mean, you know. Listen to early Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. I'm not talking about Busting Loose Chuck Brown. Because really, that's go-go, but that's not really go-go in the terms of what go-go is. That's more like just funk. You know what I'm saying? But right. That funk hit so much different than all of the funk that was coming out in 1977, 76. You know what I'm saying? That sound of go-go had really developed. You know, it was just some real hard funk shit. But even that shit hit different. You see what I'm saying? So it's definitely in the water down there. It's definitely in the water. And I think that, you know, as far as the things that soulfully influence me or influence me funk wise, I think that D.C., plays a major role in how I attack or just how I do shit. You know, how I like shit done.
I think it's good that when I get to see Go-Go kind of live outside of that realm because it's so niche in that area, but I can hear it in other bands and even some of the Lettuce stuff kind of calls back to Go-Go.
Yeah, that's one thing I really enjoy about Lettuce too is like everybody in that band, we all think the exact same way. It's got to be right. It's got to or nothing at all. And I think that one thing that me and Dykes and I, we talked every day, basically every day during this pandemic. In fact, we were on tour. We were in Europe when the Corona stuff started happening and like we ended up having to cancel our tour and come home. And I've been home since fucking March. But anyway, one of the great things about playing with Deitch is that, man, he is just a student like I'm a student. Like you are always a student. When you really dope, you that's why I don't really think it's in my in my heart to teach so much. Cause I mean I want to teach, but I don't want to teach. I want to teach like music history. I don't want to teach like how to play. Cause that's really like that's something that I can't teach. But I think that he is a student the way that I'm a student. And I think that when you realize that you're always going to be a student, then you just make you by default, you make yourself better. And, you know, and what we don't know, we're students. So we go and we do the research. And I think that musically, like there's like he's really a huge part of that also. And I'm proud of him in the sense of how, you know, because he knows about Go-Go. And when I first met him, he's not from D.C., but he knew so much about Go-Go. He knew about Jungle Boogie from Rare Essence. He knew about Rare Essence and E.U. and Sugar Bear and you know, like all the, I'm like, how do you know about all this shit? Like, Go-Go stays in D.C., like nobody outside of DC has really ever heard of Go-Go unless they're musicians. They don't know what Go-Go is. So, you know, he fucking knew. And whenever we go in, I mean, there's even still stuff. Like we just put out Checker Record and there's this term, I think maybe you know it, but there's this term in DC when the Go-Go is really killing, is cranking. And there's a certain speed of where it cranks, where it's got the where that shit got the crank. You know what I'm saying? And this and you can't play it too fast and you can't play it too slow. You can play it whatever speed you want, but for it to crank, it has to be at just I don't know what speed it is. I'll know if he's playing it. And but there's gotta be this, and we are constantly trying to find where it is, because it's the one speed where everything's just going to be working correctly and it's just going to make us grow wings and fly away off the stage.
Oh yeah. The beautiful thing about Go-Go is that it's amazing party music. The
crazy I miss a Go-Go, man. I haven't been to a Go-Go in about fucking 20 years.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, I really man,
Even the radio stations flip over.
Oh my, yeah, you know, I just miss people, man. Shit, just in the house.
Yeah, oh. We're all feeling bad. We're staying at home for way too long.
Yeah.
Now you played with Lettuce, Warren Haynes Band, John Cleary, John Scofield, mm-hmm. Ghost Note, Snarky Puppy, Lettuce Seed, Tedeschi Trucks, The Nth Power with Nikki Gillespie, who I went to school with at Berkeley, Robert Randolph and the Family Band. Yeah, long way back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then Robert Randolph and the Family Band and so many other people. And so do you have like an interesting or notable or memorable experience that you can share, like one particular that stands out?
Yeah, I do, actually. I'll tell you something funny. I'll tell you a funny one. So you mentioned... You mentioned Robert Randolph in the Family Band. I'm going to talk about Robert for a little bit. I hope he listens to this. Robert and I talk shit to each other all the time, but I credit Robert Randolph for making me tough in this industry. This industry can fucking suck sometimes. And when I first joined this band, Adam Smirnoff, Schmeans from Lettuce, was also playing with him, and he was the one that got me the gig. And so when I started playing with the Family Band, you know, and then I was the new guy. I was the youngest guy and I was the new guy. So they were always giving me shit. And at the time, this was like the first time, like this was around the time I just started doing bus tours, right? And I was on the bus and I really felt so good. I'm like, yeah, nigga, I'm on a bus. Yeah, motherfucker, da da da. My cell phone bill is paid. And all, you know what I'm saying? All kind of shit, you know, that a young dude would be really psyched about. I just remember that after like a month of being on that gig, I would dread going. I would dread it because they would always make fun of me and not make fun of me, but like, you know, poke fun at me, basically. They was always picking on me because I was the new guy. And one of the things that really used to make me mad was that Robert's sister, Lanisha, in high school, they used to call me Niggle. That was my nickname. And I did not like that shit at all. And I never told her that because I had never gotten close enough to any of them to want to talk to them about some shit like that anyway, because they was always fucking with me. Right. So I was, and the funny thing is I always say all the time, I used to quit that band after every gig. I'm like, I quit. I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not playing with them no more. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of them fucking with me. I'm all of that. I'm not playing. But you know what? The funny thing about all of that is, and they used to be bad too. Like they would be on the, I remember we was on stage one time and we was singing something and I was still kind of learning the material, you know? But every time I would open my mouth up to sing, they would always be like, oh, okay, all right, okay. That would be me when I'd be like, okay, back the fuck up, because y'all called me, remember? they were singing something, and they were both, and Robert and his sister Lanisha, who are my fucking homies now? Who are my homies? Me and Robert get together now, and we talk about this shit, and we laugh. And I'm so grateful that he did. Because I'm not gonna say I was a punk, because I ain't never been no punk, but like I'm just grateful that they showed me how to really conduct myself and not to always take shit so seriously or act and be serious when you need to in this industry, because it's rough for a lot of people. I can't imagine what a woman goes through. You know what I'm saying? Like it's, you know, if I went through what I went through, I can't imagine what they go through, you know, but they made me really, really tough in this business. So a lot of good came from that. And actually me and Robert, like I was just texting with him earlier today and we might go do a social distance gig somewhere, you know, just to play, just to make some money somewhere. So yeah, that was one thing. I'll tell you another, you got time for another story?
Sure.
Okay. This is a funny one. My very first bus tour was with Soul Live during the Up Here tour. Okay. We were riding along and we were in San Francisco one night and we had went out, we went out and partied all night, I think somewhere, and then got on the bus and we're like, okay, oh, I'm gonna get on the bus and go to sleep. Oh, thank God. So we get, and I set up like this enormous crash, like a bunch of pillows, like in my bunk. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. And so the bus breaks down. It breaks down. And so we had to pull over and get the bus fixed, but we're going to be late for the gig. So the bus is going to stay in Oakland. And we have to rent a 15 passenger van and drive from Oakland to LA. We drive from Oakland to LA. And on the way, we're out in the middle of nowhere and starving. So we stop at a gas station and I get an egg and cheese biscuit with sausage on it. But I took the sausage off because I don't really eat pork. So I eat it and we get back on the road. I go to sleep. I sleep till LA and I get up out of the van. We get to LA. We get to the Key Club. I remember it like it was yesterday. We're at the Key Club. And I get out of the car and something don't really feel right. It ain't bad. It's not bad, but it just don't feel right. And I'm like, okay, maybe I just got to go use the bathroom. Maybe I just go, you know, I'll be good. So I go and get ready to do the sound check. And I'm laying on the couch in the dressing room. And then I just feel like I got to puke. So I go, I know this is kind of nasty, but I go and I've never done this before ever in my life, but I puked. So it was like so long. It was like, you know how they say projectile, like, you know, with that scene in, not Poltergeist. What's the one when her head turned around all the way? You know, which one I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh God.
You know, which one I'm talking about.
Exorcist.
Exorcist, yeah. Like that type of shit. And the dude that thought I was all like messed up on drugs and stuff like that, which I wasn't, but I had gotten food poisoning. So now that's the first time, right? The show is and we got there late. So the show is an hour. It's about an hour and a half, right? So I got an hour and a half to get myself together. Bro, I am puking every 5 minutes until they call, literally they call my name on stage to come and sing. And I had to sing next to Lettucey. Lettucey and I were doing a duet. And so I'm literally, Lettucey's out first, and then I go out. And so I'm sitting at the door on the side before I have to go out on stage, right to the stage, with a bucket. And then I hear Al Evans say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Nigel Hall." And I'm fucking puking, and I just finished it, and I put the bucket down. And the whole time, I felt like I was just going to fucking go all over the stage. But I went out there, and I was hoping that my breath didn't stink too bad. But I went out there, and I fucking sang like a bird the whole time on the thin fringe of just letting whoever was in my way have it. And we sang like a bird, and I did not puke, and I did everything, and I did the screams, and I did it like it was the record. Like nothing changed with the performance. And then I did my thing, and I like kind of ran off the stage, like a little trot off the stage, get back out. I see that bucket, and I proceed to puke the entire night up until the next day. But I still got the job done. I still was able to go out there and sing and make it look like, because everybody was looking at me like, yo, how the fuck is he doing this right now? Shit, I don't know. I wish I could tell you. But I just remember feeling so shitty right after I got done, but feeling so proud of myself because it was all good. And like, you know, Lettucey can sing. She out there singing. She not out there half-ass singing. So I can't come out there and half-ass sing. If you gonna sing, damn it, I'm gonna sing. You're not gonna wash me on my own gig. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I hear that. That's crazy that you were able to make that through. I think.
Oh man, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I remember that shit like it was yesterday too. And everybody was just like, I remember when we left LA, everybody was just like, man, you a cold motherfucker, bro, because I would have never gotten to do nothing like that. I would have never. I've had to step in for people before when they're not feeling good on gigs. So I totally understand, and it's not fucking cool. But you can tell I'm still proud of myself.
As you should be. It's very different singing and having that happen than playing this
sucks.
One. If you're like playing in the background, you can kind of fake it a little bit more, but
if you got to be out front, right out in front.
Yeah. But so then you talked about having another record at some point. So what's next musically for you?
I have a record coming out in February. My officially third record is called Spiritual. And it is a record that I did with some very, very, very good friends of mine in Richmond, Virginia. I went back to the DMV to record this record. And it's got some very, very, it's got some different material on it. It's definitely a different Nigel Hall record. But this is how I always describe it. I always say that if Ladies and Gentlemen was my brown sugar, then this one is my voodoo. You know, because of the fact that like it's, and I'm not comparing myself to D'Angelo in any way, but I'm just using that as a comparison of the contrast of those two records, basically is what I'm saying. And it's still a soul record, and it's still some soulful stuff on it. I mean, there's still some remnants of Ladies and Gentlemen. You know, I recorded a song on there by Greg Fillinghames called Baby I Do Love You on it. That's kind of that I actually recorded for Ladies and Gentlemen, but it didn't make the record. And it was cool too, man, because it was me, Charlie Hunter, and Adam Deitch and Bill Summers from the Headhunters. And it was cool, but for some reason it didn't make the cut. But it did this time. And this time the special guest I have on it is a hero of mine, like one of my, like in my top three, Patrice Rushen. She's on the record. And I'm really, shout to Patrice. I know she's out there in LA. Patrice has been like really a huge inspiration to me over the years. But as of recently, you know, we've been talking a lot and keeping in touch. And, you know, she'll show me some cool stuff to play on the road sometimes when I'm in need of some new shit to play. And, you know, she's just like a homie now. You know, it's really cool that, you know, that I can call on somebody like her and it'd be my homie, but my hero also, you know, like John Cleary. It's the same thing. Me and John get together. We fucking like old high school buddies, man. Like, you know, we have fun together, and he lives on the same street that I live on, and I go hang out. I have his Wurlitzer at my house right now because he's in Europe. You know, that's my homie. That's like, we're homies, you know. It's really good to have people like that on your side. So yeah, so I got Patrice Rushen on the record, and I got Marcus King on the record. He's blowing up.
Yeah.
Marcus is my homie. Jeff Coffin from Dave Matthews Band is playing on there. I have Zoidus. Zoidus made the record. Ryan Zoidus from Lettuce. It's a great record. It's really turned into, it was already good when I was like recording it. I was like, oh, this is gonna be some different shit. But man, what it's blossomed to, I think, is something I'm very, very proud of. And this is like one of the records, you know, I feel like every artist puts a record out in their life that is completely and 100% them, and that they are 100% proud of. I mean, they all are 100% proud of all of them, but you know, just this being one of the records that really showed who I am, this record is it, who I am as a person. And I'm really, really happy with the outcome. I've never been happy about anything I've ever done as far as a solo situation. This is the best shit I've ever done.
As it should be, as you continue to be a student and continue to evolve. I like the analogy from brown sugar to voodoo. Voodoo, yeah. I'm sure many people have used as a testament. Then after your voodoo, you'll get to your Black Messiah, I guess, next.
No, after my voodoo, I'm going to stop using D'Angelo analogies.
I gotcha. So we have two rapid fire questions as we wrap up today that we ask all the guests. What advice would you give someone starting out in music today?
My advice would be to make sure this is what you want to do. Make sure this is something that you want to make sure that your love for music is more than your love for wanting to be famous or wanting to be in front of people. Because I think the real artistry comes from when you don't care who's listening, because then you can actually be yourself. So if you don't want everybody to know who you are, if you don't want nobody in your business because you're making it their business, then And I mean this as a real musician too, man. Because like I do this because I love to do it. The check is nice, but I do it because I have to do this. I have to. I have no choice in the matter. So, if it's something that you're willing to submit the rest of your life to, then do it. Jump in. And don't just dip your foot in. Jump all the fucking way in. You know, because that's the only way you're gonna make an impact in this world. Is if you do that.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. I think that's great advice. And so lastly, what do you want your legacy to be musically when it's all said and done? It might be too early. You got a lot of years ahead of you, but what do you want to be known for?
You know what? This is an easy one. I just want my legacy to be somebody who made some good shit, who made some dope shit. I want to be associated with fucking dopeness because I'm dope. And I'm not saying that in a big-headed sense. I'm not saying that. You have to feel that way. You have to feel that way about yourself in order to have influence on someone else. I'm not saying that at all. I want y'all to be listening to this. Listen to him. No, because that's not where it's coming from. Where it's coming from is you have to, as the Bible says, as a man thinketh, so is he. So if I think other than that, then every time I go into something, it will never be what it should be because I'm already going into it half-assed. Like I said, you got to jump all the way in, you know, and I just want my legacy. I don't want my legacy to be, you know, I want my legacy to be associated with dopeness, and everything this motherfucker did was dope. That's all.
Well, it definitely seems like you're well on your way, and we look forward to hearing this new record when it comes out in 2021. And hopefully we start getting the world moving again so you can get out there and start touring for that record as well. But we've
Thank you so much. Pleasure,
Nigel, having you on. It's so great to talk to you from a fellow Washingtonian to another.
My man, bro, my man.
We'll definitely circle back to you when this is out so we can post it, tag everything, and keep in touch. Maybe we'll get to collaborate.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Nigel. Take care. We'll talk to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Man, I had such a good time on Deeper Groove today talking with legendary vocalist and keyboardist Nigel Hall from the Nigel Hall Band and Lettuce. You can check out his music online. Any streaming platform will have it. His Ladies and Gentlemen album. Looking forward to 2021 Spiritual. And until then, all the great Lettuce music that's online as well. I'd like to thank Tim Hall and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online Tuesdays at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. We're on all the streaming platforms. You can search for Deeper Grooves Podcast. Until then, keep it funky and be dope. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.